He's been dead for some time, Inspector. Rigor mortis is complete. He's beyond help.
How long do you think he's been dead?
Well, you see the pink and blue color of the skin? Now, that means he's been dead for some hours, you see. In gas cases, the skin turns cherry red first and then pink and blue.
Mm. How many hours?
Well, I'd say about six. I wonder why he did it.
No suicide, no?
The suicide's always...
Well, the fact that he hasn't left one could mean something. On the other hand, it may have no significance at all. But judging by the apple pie order of the rest of the flat, he seems to be a pretty methodical type. 6 hours, that's 2 in the morning.
Wait a minute, Inspector. Look at his neck.
Well?
This fellow has been strangled.
It's time for you to take your place on the jury as Bristol Myers, makers of the Mum range of deodorant, Clairol Hair Care product, and Ipana toothpaste, invite you to... consider your verdict.
On the first day of May, 1966, the body of Michael Nash was found lying on the floor of the living room of his flat. The jets of the gas stove were wide open, and the pilot light extinguished. And from all three jets came the deadly gas fumes that were to give the appearance of suicide. The living room window and both doors, the one leading to the kitchen, the other leading to an outer main passage, were closed. Newspaper had been stuffed into the cracks. At first, it would appear that the unfortunate man had been sitting in a chair in front of the gas stove, and as he inhaled the gas fumes, became unconscious, and so his body slumped from the chair and lay on the floor. You will say that the scene had every earmark of a man who had planned to end his own life. It was a scene, all right, my lord, members of the jury. The stage had been set by the murderer in order to defeat the ends of justice. Yet you will hear that when Michael Nash was put in front of the gas stove, he was already dead. No, the unfortunate man did not die from inhaling gas fumes, but from manual strangulation. Now let us examine the facts pertaining to the prisoner accused of the crime, Peter Holmes. Holmes has professed love for a ward of Michael Nash named Tamara Keating. Nash refused to give his consent to the girl's marriage with Holmes. And as you will hear, there were several bitter scenes between the two men. On the evening of the 1st of May, the evening on which Nash was murdered, Holmes, on his own admission, visited Nash. We shall perhaps never know what words passed between them. But we do know that the prisoner left Nash's flat shortly before 9 o'clock, that he was seen to leave the building walking very fast. Was Michael Nash dead when Holmes left the flat, strangled by Holmes? It is our task to prove the truth of this submission. And I now call my first witness, Richard Hunt. Mr. Hunt, you occupy the flat next door to the one so recently occupied by Michael Nash?
Yes, that's so.
You were the first to discover the body, were you not?
Yes.
Perhaps you'd be kind enough to tell the court just how this came about.
Certainly. That morning I opened my front door, found the wrong newspaper had been left outside. I always took the Guardian, Mr. Nash the Gazette. I set about to rectify the mistake, but there was no copy of the Guardian outside Nash's door. I thought perhaps he'd taken it in, so I knocked at his door. I received no reply, so I went to the kitchen door, and that was locked too. I suddenly became conscious of a strong smell of gas, and I became worried.
Please continue, sir.
I went back to the front, knocked again. Receiving no reply, I tried to open it. It was locked. Then I looked through the keyhole and saw Nash lying on the floor. I at once returned to my own flat and dialed 999.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt. Now, how long had you been a neighbor to Michael Nash?
5 years, almost.
You knew each other well?
Yes, quite well.
Did you find Mr. Nash a man of regular habits?
Yes, I did, very much so.
Now, you've just said that it was Nash's habit to take the daily copy of the Gazette.
Yes.
Did you ever know him to take in a copy of the popular picture papers of the type the Americans call tabloids?
No, never. It wasn't the type to read them.
In fact, he deplored them.
Yes, he did.
And you never saw one in his flat at any time?
Never.
Now, Mr. Hunter, you take a look at the prisoner. Have you seen him before?
Yes, I've seen him before.
You have? Where?
I met him sometimes in the flat lifts when he was on his way to see Mr. Nash.
Did Mr. Nash speak to you of Holmes?
Only once, about a month before he died.
Can you remember what he said?
Yes, I can.
I had a visit from your niece yesterday.
She's a very pretty girl, is Tamara.
Still mooning over this fellow Holmes, I'm afraid. He's a scoundrel, if you like. Tamara thinks he's in love with her.
Why shouldn't he be?
Oh, a fellow like that. If you ask me, he's in love with the money she's going to get from the will. I told Tamara to forget him, but she's a stubborn little thing.
Let her chip off the old block. Have you met him?
Of course I've met him. Wouldn't give an opinion of the fellow if I hadn't. Just drinks, smokes, and reads politics. No wonder the country's going downhill.
The trouble with you is you're a square, Nash.
Square indeed.
Thank you. When did you see the prisoner last?
Well, I'd been to a party and got back to my flat at 2 in the morning. I saw a man by Nash's door. However, he had his back to me and was wearing a raincoat with a collar turned up and a felt hat. It looked like Holmes, but I couldn't be sure. That was on the 1st of May.
Did you happen to notice that he was carrying a newspaper?
Yes, it fell out of his raincoat pocket. He stopped to pick it up. One of those picture papers.
One of those picture papers. Thank you, son.
Mr. Hunt, where were you standing when you saw the figure in the raincoat and felt hat on the 1st of May?
I was a few yards from the door of my flat.
Each flat door gives onto a main corridor, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Which is not very well lit, I understand.
Very badly lit, which is why I couldn't be sure who the man I saw was.
Yet you can be sure that the paper you saw him drop and retrieve, an action which must have taken less than a second, was a popular picture paper?
I think it was.
Ah, you only think it was.
I'm not sure.
Thank you. That is all.
With the court's permission, I now call Inspector Thomas Davis. Inspector Davis, when you, together with Dr. Dunn, went to Michael Nash's flat, did you find both the front and back doors locked?
Yes, I did.
They were locked?
Yes, they were.
Well, how did you gain access to the flat?
By cutting away the lock on the front door.
Yes. What happened then?
We went into the sitting room, saw Nash's body. I turned off the gas and I opened all the windows.
I see.
The door was locked from the inside. There was no key on the inside of the lock. I thought at first the dead man might have locked the door, remove the key from the lock and put it in somewhere else. Well, just then I heard a key being turned in the lock of the kitchen door and his niece walked in.
What on earth? Uncle! What was happening?
I'm afraid beyond help. Is he your uncle?
Yes, I'm Tamara Keating. He's the... But
look,
he's not...
You'd better come out into the hall. This isn't a very healthy atmosphere. Now, Miss Keating, how did you get in?
Get in?
Well, the back door was locked.
Yes, I know, but the key was in the usual place.
Oh? Well, where's that?
Where it's always kept, under the jar of flowers, by the door.
Why didn't you come in by the front door?
I always come in by the back door. What's happened? Oh, please tell me. What's happened?
Inspector, that door must have been locked after the murder was committed.
Yes.
Then only someone with full knowledge of the murder, or the murderer himself, could have locked it.
That is so.
In fact, the door must have been locked, and the key put back under the jar by someone who knew where the key was habitually kept.
Oh, that's my opinion.
Now, the witness Hunt did not know because he could not get into the flat without summoning the police. Miss Keating, the dead man's niece, and Ward knew, as she told him. What about the prisoner?
Well, he denied all knowledge of the key, or the flat.
Did you not find evidence to the contrary?
Yes, sir. His fingerprints were discovered on the flower pot base.
Thank you, Inspector. Now, we come to the manner in which the scene of Nash's death was staged. The cracks where the door and windows did not fit perfectly, they were stuffed with newspaper.
They were.
You examined the paper?
Yes. They were all pages from the Guardian, with one exception.
Oh, Oh, and what was that exception?
The two center pages from a paper called Photo Today.
A daily picture paper, the type which we have been told the dead man frowned upon and would not have in his flat.
Yes, sir.
What was the date of that paper?
April 30th, 1966.
The day before the murder?
Yes, sir.
Did you have those pages tested for fingerprints?
I did, sir. But the quality of the paper was such that, well, prints wouldn't take.
Hmm. On information you received, you questioned the accused?
Yes, sir. I went to see Holmes on the evening of May 2nd.
Did you, while you were with him, see a copy of Photo Today, dated May the 1st?
Yes, sir. It was lying on the floor.
Did you examine the paper?
I did, sir.
Were the two center pages missing?
Yes, sir. They were.
Did the accused explain what he had done with those missing pages?
He said that he didn't know that they were missing.
In other words, you could give no explanation?
No, sir, none.
Inspector, did you find the accused's fingerprints on any of the furniture or articles in Nash's flat?
No, sir.
Did you find any in the kitchen?
Yes, sir, I did. On two glasses and a soda water bottle.
Elsewhere?
No, sir.
Did you find anyone else's prints on the heater, the deceased, for instance?
No, sir. The fact that we did not find any fingerprints of any sort was, well, in itself highly suspicious.
Why do you say that, Inspector?
Well, you see, sir, somebody had recently cleaned the heater. So clean as to remove all prints of any sort.
Why should you regard the cleaning of the heater as suspicious?
Because I questioned the woman who came to clean the flat regularly. And she said that she cleaned the heater a fortnight before Mr. Nash's death.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the heater had been used every day since.
Yes.
Somebody, other than the cleaner, wiped it clean. We think it must have been the person who killed Michael Nash.
Why are you so convinced?
Well, we'd have been expected to have found fingerprints on the taps of the heater at least. Even if Nash himself had turned the gas on, his prints would have shown. We regard it as highly suspicious that there were no fingerprints of any sort.
You are suggesting, are you not, Inspector, that whoever turned the gas on to cause Nash's death then wiped the taps clean in order to avoid identification?
I am, sir.
Thank you. No more questions.
Just a moment, Mr. Henderson. Don't you think that this would be a good, opportune moment to adjourn?
And so the court adjourns in the trial of Peter Holmes for the murder of Michael Nash. We would like to remind you that this dramatic presentation is brought to you by Bristol Myers. The trial is once more in session. Inspector Davies has resumed his position in the witness box, and counsel for the defense rises to cross-examine.
Inspector, my learned friend has enlisted your aid in creating a number of Aunt Sally's in order to knock them down. An exercise by which he had hoped to impress the court.
Objection, my lord.
Now, Mr. Henderson, are you not creating a verbal sally in order to detract from what the court has already heard? Counsel will look to this mode of questioning.
I stand corrected, your lordship. Inspector Davies, I will open my cross-examination on a different level of thought. Would you say there was any mystery as to my client's movements on the fatal day? Did he not admit to being in Nash's flat?
Yes, he did. But not at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Did you not question him as to the length of his stay?
Yes.
You questioned him as to whether he and the now dead man had a drink together, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And my client told you they did drink.
That is so.
Therefore, you would not be surprised at finding my client's fingerprints liberally sprinkled over two drinking glasses.
No, I suppose not.
Now, Inspector, a great deal has been made of the two missing pages from the issue of Photo Today for the edition dated the 1st of May. When you called upon my client, the remaining pages were, and I quote you, on the floor of his flat. And you found it significant that the center pages were missing.
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, you know only too well, sir. The center pages of the missing picture paper were used with the other newspapers in filling up the crack.
And you find this significant?
I most certainly do. I've already said so, sir.
I put it to you that a most logical explanation would be this. My client called upon Mr. Nash. He has his newspaper with him. The center pages fall out, and later, much later, somebody uses these sheets to help stuff the cracks between the door and the floor.
I don't think it's all that logical, sir.
Have you not ever bought a newspaper, put it down somewhere, picked it up again, and later, upon examination, found one or two pages missing?
I don't know whether I have or I haven't.
Really? And you were trained policeman. However much more uncertain would a layman such as my client be? No more questions.
I now call Dr. Adrian Isherwood. Dr. Isherwood, you are a senior police surgeon attached to the Criminal Investigation Department of Scotland Yard.
I am.
Now, you were called to examine the dead body of one identified as Michael Nash.
That's right, I was.
Will you please tell the court the results of your examination?
Certainly. First, we merely looked for confirming signs that Nash had committed suicide. However, I noticed something rather peculiar. A slight bruise, and this worried me.
Why did the bruise worry you, Doctor?
It was no more than half an inch in diameter, and I could not account for it. In attempting to probe into the cause of the bruise, I discovered something much more startling.
And what was that, Doctor?
I discovered a fracture of the hyoid bone.
Will you tell the court what the hyoid bone is?
Certainly, yes. It is a U-shaped bone at the base of the spine.
Would it be possible for this bone to be fractured without an outside agency?
If you're asking me whether the hyoid bone could be fractured without a good deal of physical pressure, the answer is no.
And what inference should we draw from that, Doctor?
It is perfectly logical assumption that Nash met his death by manual strangulation.
Are you convinced on this point?
Perfectly convinced. You see, not only was he strangled, there was clear indication that the unfortunate man did not breathe in any carbon monoxide. There was no sign of inhalation of gas poison.
And you were able to determine at the post-mortem that death from strangulation took place between 1 and 2.30 on the morning of the 1st.
That is so.
No more questions, thank you.
No questions, my lord.
I now call Miss Tamara Keating. Miss Keating, you live at 23 Hurst Mansions, Kensington, London, South West.
Yes, I do.
The late Michael Nash was your uncle, was he not?
Yes, he was.
Now, the prisoner at the bar is known to you?
You are referring to Peter. Peter whom? Well, known to me is an understatement. I love him, and when he's cleared of this ridiculous charge, I hope to marry him.
Your uncle was also your guardian, Lord Enchantress.
Yes.
Your guardian pays the rent of your flat, paid for your tuition at the Slade School for Art?
Yes, he did.
In fact, your uncle demonstrated his deep affection for you by carrying out his duties as a guardian in a most generous manner.
Yes, he was most generous, except where Peter was concerned.
And because your uncle refused his permission for you to marry?
Yes.
He never made Peter Holmes welcome?
No, he did not.
Why?
My uncle was an unmitigated snob. And because Peter never went to public school and his father was a postman, well, that was enough to ruin him in my uncle's eyes.
Are you being fair to the memory of your uncle?
I am being perfectly fair.
You yourself have said that your uncle was generous and did all he could for your happiness.
He did, with this exception. He had a blind spot as far as Peter was concerned.
Are you aware that your uncle had caused inquiries to be made concerning Peter Herbert's background? And he discovered...
I know that Peter went to a reformatory, but you just like my uncle. You don't understand. He never had a chance. His mother...
Please, Miss Keating. I was not going to refer to the prisoner's background. That would have been inadmissible. I was referring to the fact that Peter Holmes was an active member of an organization known as the Socialist Party of Great Britain at a time when your uncle was a member of the National Committee for Combating Socialism.
I see. Yes, that's true.
Is it not also true? When your uncle and Holmes met for the first time, they argued so violently as to cause your uncle to order Holmes from his flat?
Yes, that is true.
Miss Keating, I want you to tell me what happened during the discussion between your uncle, the prisoner, and yourself, the last time the three of you were together.
It seems pointless.
I am afraid it is not pointless. Did not your uncle say that he called you both together to say that if you married Holmes, he would strike you out of his will?
Yes, he did.
Can you remember with a reasonable exactitude the words used by your uncle and Peter when they quarreled?
More or less. My uncle was going off on his high horse about breeding him.
The whole thing is quite ridiculous. Why everybody wants to bring everybody else down to a common disgusting level is beyond me. These long-haired tramps whining about equal rights, lot of poppycock. You ask any horse breeder...
Humans are not horses, Mr. Nash.
Indeed, they are not. Some horses are finely bred... Whereas
this conversation is getting ridiculous. Uncle, you are living in the past, and thank goodness it is in the past. Why, Peter's relatives are as good as ours.
Of course they are, my dear, if they stay where they belong, in their rather dreary backyard. I want you to marry someone who'll be worthy of you. Someone of your own background, not that whining little upstart carrying a chip on his shoulder as though it was the order of St. George.
If you're referring to me, Mr. Nash, I
think... You're Nick Rutland, are you? Yes, I am referring to you. I think I don't know what you're after. You won't get it, my boy. If Tamara insists on marrying you, I'll strike her out of my will, and I mean that.
If I didn't love Tamara so, I'd forget your age and give you the thrashing you deserve.
I have nothing more to say to you. Please go.
Oh, come on, Peter. Let's go. We both walked out of Uncle's flat, and that was the last time.
Thank you, Miss Keating. No more questions.
Miss Keating, you loved your uncle despite his temper and flagrant snobbery?
Yes.
And you loved my client, the prisoner in the dock?
With all my heart and soul.
And Holmes was fully aware of the deep affection you had for your uncle?
Yes, of course he was. And that is why I know that despite everything, Peter would not have harmed a hair of Uncle Michael's head.
Thank you. Now, and this is very important, have you ever been accompanied by Peter Holmes when you gained access to your uncle's flat by means of the kitchen door?
Quite a number of times.
Have there not been occasions when you have asked Peter Holmes to lift the flower pot in order for you to get the key?
Yes, I have.
You are under oath. Are you sure that he did so?
Positive.
Thank you, Miss Keating. A most important piece of evidence that explains my client's fingerprints on the flower pot. I trust that the jury will take note of this. No more questions for that.
That closes the case for Crown Law. Defense?
My lord, never in my long history at the bar have I had to rebut such flimsy evidence as the prosecution has seen fit to bring against my client.
I have already ruled that the prisoner has a case to answer. Do you or do you not wish to call any witnesses?
Convinced as I am of his innocence, I call the prisoner at the bar Peter Holmes. Mr. Holmes, you were at the home of Michael Nash on the evening of April the 30th, 1966?
Yes, I was.
What time did you leave his flat?
It was about 10 o'clock.
It is common cause that Nash was strangled between the hours of 1:30 and 2:30 a.m. the following morning. Where were you at that time?
I will give you the same answer as I gave the police, and that is in bed asleep. Where would anybody be at that time?
Precisely. Did you at any time desire Michael Nash's death?
No, I did not.
Thank you. I trust the jury will accept your word. I certainly do.
I do not. You quarreled with Michael Nash that night, did you not?
Yes, I did.
You hated everything Nash stood for.
You thought he was a snob, a member of the upper classes.
Ever ready to grind the toiling masses into the dust.
You needn't use those tactics on me. I may not have your accent, Mr. Prosecutor, but I'm not a fool.
Do I have to tolerate the impertinence of this man? The prisoner will confine his observations to answering questions put to him.
My lord, I'm on trial for my life. This counsel is trying to say that everyone who wants to overthrow capitalism is a murderer.
I put it to you, Holmes, not everyone who opposes the capitalist system is a potential murderer. But you had an even stronger motive than your political beliefs. You had the knowledge that if Nash was destroyed before he could alter his will, you would acquire his lease as well as his money.
That's a day stinking lie.
I ask the jury to forgive my client for his emotional outburst. Yet all decent-minded persons must raise their eyebrows at my learned friend's attempt to introduce a political note into the trial. First, the prosecution declares that my client's motive for strangling the uncle of the woman he loved was to obtain the dead man's money as well as his lease. And then, as though realizing the implausibility of the case, introduces this nonsense of class war.
My learned friend refers to what he is pleased to call nonsense. But here is a man, fanatical in his hatred of all the things that Michael Nash held dear. The Crown does not say that he killed because of that hatred. But that when you add his bitterness and his antagonism to the now dead man's refusal to consider him as a suitable husband for Miss Keating, then, I say with all the emphasis I command, then you have a mind, Holmes's mind, that has become distorted with hate and loathing. Someone killed Nash. Who? And why? We know the why. And the who is the prisoner at the bar.
Well, you have heard all the relevant facts. Now we ask you to consider your verdict. Would you say that the accused, Peter Holmes, was guilty or not guilty of the murder of Michael Nash? In a moment or two, we shall give you the verdict recorded in the actual trial upon which this dramatic presentation is based. What was your verdict?
did you find Peter Holmes guilty or not guilty? In the actual trial upon which this dramatic presentation is based, the jury returned a verdict of guilty.
Bristol Myers, makers of the Mum range of deodorant, Clairol hair care products, and Ipana toothpaste, hope you enjoyed tonight's presentation of Consider Your Verdict, produced by Michael Silver.